Welcome to Irish Illustrated Overtime. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by John Bryce of Football Scoop. And John, 530 yards of total offense, 5 turnovers created, and 3 non-offensive touchdowns. That will add up to a 58-7 win when you're already the much better team. That's what Notre Dame was heading into this game against Pittsburgh today. And it was a second half celebration, really. 17-0 at the half, and then an absolute obliteration of the Panthers in the second stanza.
And you know, we were really close to seeing that obliteration completely unfold in the first half, despite it being relatively close and Notre Dame only pushing it to 17-0 at the half on the last play of the half with that Spencer Schrader field goal. You never felt like the Irish were not in command. And again, as we noted earlier, Sam Hartman, 8 of 10 in the first quarter, had a couple of unfortunate interceptions, one ball, a tipped ball, one ball Rico Flores got completely redirected. Almost looked like a hockey check, no penalty. And then the pick guy undercut the throw and made a great pick after he'd gotten away with the hook there. But again, a complete performance for Notre Dame. You get 288 passing yards from Sam Hartman, but 2 picks and no touchdowns. And without seeing the final score, you hear those numbers and you think, man, I bet Notre Dame was in a dogfight. No, Notre Dame ran the dogs all over Pittsburgh today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to pull up the drive chart, and it was even better than I thought for Notre Dame, but more frustrating for Notre Dame fans at home even, probably, when you think about this. Here's where Notre Dame ended their drives. The Pitt 32 with an interception, which was a deep shot. The Pitt 16 when they had first and goal at the 10. Tip pass, but a bad pass by Sam Hartman as well for the interception. Punting from the Pitt 36 because of losing yardage on third down. A touchdown off of an interception. A punt from the Pitt 46-yard line, once again in Pitt territory, and down to the 5-yard line, and they had to settle for a field goal, basically, because they ran out of time. With about 12 seconds left, Notre Dame let the clock roll down to 12 seconds. Marcus Freeman said he knew he was going to take one shot at the end zone. A penalty pushed him back. I think Pittsburgh probably made a very smart play when Notre Dame threw into the end zone on third down in the waning seconds, interfering with Notre Dame. That's a penalty, is only half the distance to the goal line, and forced Notre Dame to kick the field goal. It's a frustrating 17 points. It stopped being frustrating thereafter, but I bet there was a fair amount of Notre Dame angst from the fans, even though Notre Dame was moving up and down the field in that first half.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some angst, some gnashing of the teeth, because, again, we've seen some of these situations hamper this team and directly attribute to the Irish's losses earlier this year against Ohio State and Louisville when they had productive opening possessions. I mean, even at Louisville, they quickly moved out to midfield and were taking a shot down into Card's territory when Louisville was able to make that interception. And so there's some understandable gnashing of the teeth at that point. But I would also point out, I think there was understandable and very obvious growth in a number of different areas today from the Notre Dame offense. And as good as any 58-7 win is for any team or any program, particularly on the micro standpoint with this Notre Dame program, I think you saw genuine, legitimate offensive growth and evolution today.
Yeah, especially a wide receiver, and I kind of wanted to hammer that point home in the press conference. I know you asked about Chris Tyree, and he was the key today because he had a punt return touchdown to start the game, if anybody missed this, and it was a beautiful one, an 82-yarder where he had to make a couple people miss in space. Then he had what I thought was his most impressive wide receiver play of the season, sprinting down the right seam, the 47-yard, heavily contested catch. It was a great throw, but a better catch coming into his own, and I think it's important that Notre Dame's receivers were targeted 15 times, came up with 11 catches for more than 225 yards. Granted, Jaden Greathouse and Jaden Thomas came back, but that was only about 33 yards from that group, the Jadens, as we talked about pregame. The rest of the group has grown in their absence.
Absolutely grown in their absence. And to your point on Chris Tyree's catch, Tim, and when you watch the replay of it, and this is something that's been coached. This has been an extreme coaching point for all of the Notre Dame wideouts, but particularly Tyree in his transition. Tobias Merriweather is another. You see him catch it on his fingertips, corral it, and bring it into his body. That it's hard to hammer home how much that specifically has been a coaching point, a teaching point. Now, look, it took Chris Tyree being freakishly fast and being a great athlete to run himself into position to get it on his fingertips and then pull it in and secure the catch. And another thing in the passing attack today, Tim, we saw some earlier stuff, some swing passes, some different things with motion, a nice deke on what looked like it was going to be a wheel route, and then bringing the receiver back towards the line, throwing it shorter, letting him try to get some downfield blocking. So, again, new wrinkles, some new evolutions, and guys continuing to play and get better, and then working the middle of the field for some shots downfield, deep downfield, when they felt they could take them.
to put a bow on the wide receivers, Rico Flores had a big play where he had a catch and run of 60 yards, two catches for 72 yards overall. Tobias Merriweather was in the second half when the game was decided, but at 42 yards down the pipe, and that would have been a 52-yard touchdown if Hartman laid it up there to make sure he was open by enough where he wanted to lay up to make sure Tobias Merriweather would catch it. Thomas came back on a 16-yard catch. I think Jaden Thomas is going to be working himself back into shape for the rest of the regular season, but he helps the team in many ways when he's out there, and maybe his breakout game is the bowl game for Jaden Thomas because they've kind of, as we said, grown around him. Jordan Faison with a catch, Braylon James with a late catch. I know that'll make a lot of the recruiting fans happy because it was a third down play too. That's going to help Braylon James's confidence. It's a third down to keep the chains moving. Sets up a Cooper Flanagan touchdown. That was the only touchdown pass of the day. Scored one touchdown pass, and it was on the roll by Steve Angeli. So they got a lot of guys involved in this one. Mitchell Evans, five catches for 66 yards. Once again, led Notre Dame in receptions. Injured his knee. Could be his quad, could be under his knee. He left the game, but it seemed like neither he nor Cam Hart, not to jump topics here, finished the game in the locker room. They were both injured, both stayed on the field, so we'll get an update on their status. But the best day by far for the wide receivers. And I think they're going to probably need another best day going up next week against Clemson. As you said, confidence now. They have a chance for that.
They do. And again, in terms of offensive growth, Tim, and you had the great stat about receivers making 11 receptions on 15 targets for well north of 200 yards. The other offensive note that I love out of today is you had five different guys carry the ball for positive yardage, I believe. 12 different players record a reception. I mean, that's obviously 17 impactful positive moments. Positive events, snaps for your skill players in your offense. That's a lot of diversity. That's a lot of development. That's exactly what you need. That's getting more and more people involved so that it becomes much harder for Clemson to look at film this week and say, okay, well, it's not just take away Audric Estime and take away Mitchell Evans and then we try to beat Notre Dame 13-10. No, Notre Dame is evolving and growing weapons.
And the key we said pregame was Notre Dame's wide receivers to evolve. But one key we knew about pregame was that the best unit on the field was Notre Dame's defense. The first 10 drives for Pittsburgh, 9 of them gained less than 20 yards. The one drive at the end of the half did result in a field goal attempt, a 45-yard missed field goal. That was a nice drive by Pitt. I think they had 4 of their 6 total until their last drive where they scored a touchdown. 4 of their 6 total gains of over 10 yards were on back-to-back-to-back-to-back passes on that drive. Notre Dame able to come up with a stop with a little bit of pressure. Jaden Mickey, this is crucial later for our conversation. He was beaten for a stop-and-go, would have been touchdown, but Pittsburgh missed it. Notre Dame was able to stop the next play. Tremendous defense throughout the game. And then Jaden Mickey, and it was a nice emotional moment for him at the press conference. He got a pick six on third down to start the avalanche. That was the beginning of the second half avalanche. It was good to see Mickey bounce back because no one's going to remember that he got beat on a stop and go that wasn't a touchdown, but he remembers it, and Mickens remembers it, and Golden remembers it. So it was a big moment for the sophomore.
Further validation for this Notre Dame defense overall. And look, Pitt is really bad on offense. Pitt does not have an identity on offense, but it's also the Pitt team that beat Louisville, the Louisville team that beat Notre Dame. But within that, you have not only Notre Dame being the best unit on the field today, I continue to think Notre Dame is absolutely one of the best, most complete defenses in all of college football. And then you lose an All-American in Ben Morrison today, and you still – are part of a defense that forces 5 turnovers, that has a guy generate a pick six. X Watts continues to be just absolutely electric, getting his hands on the football. So I think within Notre Dame being absolutely one of the best defensive units in all of college football, I think the Fighting Irish very clearly also have an extremely elite and much deeper than a long time secondary.
John Bryce, I'm glad you mentioned Watts because this is a bit scattered when Notre Dame can score 58 points. We don't mention Notre Dame's dominant Audric Estime on the ground with his 3 touchdowns or Xavier Watts' 2 more interceptions or that Benjamin Morrison missed the game because of a quad injury. We think he'll be okay there. He gave it a go pregame. He was out there. I didn't know about this, and he just wasn't able to go. That's what gave Jaden Mickey the start. Not Audric Estime's best day, but a very effective day with 3 rushing touchdowns. He had a 33-yard gain. I think he had another 26-yard gain. There's a few stuffs involved there, but that's what you're going to have when your identity is to run the ball between the tackles. I liked how they got outside a little bit today, though, too.
I liked how they got outside, and I'm glad you mentioned some of those run stuffs and some things they did in the middle of the field. We've already sort of alluded to it, Tim, and certainly I bet your phone was. I know my phone was blowing up from some Notre Dame fans texting me, like, why do they continue to run straight into the middle of the line when that's obviously not the strength that Notre Dame's left flank or even right flank is? Look, running into the middle of that line and continuing to establish that, to be committed to that, absolutely helped open up some of the things we saw further downfield today in the middle of the field. And so there is a method to the madness. There is continued growth. No, it wasn't Audric Estime's best day, but Audric Estime is now through nine games sitting on 900 rushing yards. He's going to top 1,000 yards as soon as next week, we would imagine, as long as he continues to stay healthy and productive. And so, again, a lot of growth, a lot of good things, and also still coaching points, which I also think are very helpful.
One small note I think could matter as well going forward is Jadarian Price having a good day, scoring on a 10-yard touchdown run, but a very determined 23-yard run as well, where he was looting tacklers. Then he had another good kickoff return. You talk about weapons evolving. I know this has been my case all week. I've been hammering the Jadarian Price case because the 99-yard kick return was impressive. I just think he's fully healthy. Estime and Price is a 1-2, and Jeremiah Love getting back involved. He dropped a pass early. They found him again late. You might actually have this three-headed monster you could get in there. And, of course, Payne still has a role. So they need that at Clemson.
They absolutely need that. They're going to need all of those guys to bring their different skill sets because, again, that makes it so much more difficult on Clemson. It continues to be what we've also talked about. I'll have more about it next week on Football Scoop. We've already addressed it on Irish Illustrated. The job developing, maintaining, and keeping everyone engaged and bought into their roles that Dylan McCullough has done with this running back group and this running back unit, I think deserves tremendous commendation. And the same thing, the development and the evolution of what Dylan has done with his group, Chancey Stuckey with his group, to see where Chris Tyree is right now, and for Marcus Freeman to tell us tonight how much Chris Tyree was challenged after Marcus said he should have had a touchdown against Louisville. That's interesting to hear it that candidly, that directly from Marcus, I thought, because that would have been a hellaciously difficult catch for Tyree to make over the shoulder on a good play call, on a good throw, but it had to be perfect, and that was a converted running back. He said he took that, responded, spent the last 2 weeks getting that much better and better. Tyree talked about that. A lot of positives out of those elements as well.
I said Estime didn't have his best day, but he did run for at least 8 combined first downs or touchdowns. So he had an awfully good day as well on just 19 carries. He's the most important cog of this offense, clearly. I'm not banging the drum for Jadarian Price to take the ball more than Audric Estime. I just think, as I said, there's augmentation there for him. Sam Hartman, no touchdowns, 2 picks. That's a strange thing in a 58-7 win. He settled in, but as you pointed out, he had a hot start. Every play seemed to go for 7 or 8 yards on the first 2 drives. The only 2 that didn't were picked off.
He did have a hot start. I give Jared Parker credit. They did some new things. They did more early, I felt like, to get Sam Hartman into a rhythm. And again, they also, as we noted, they rotated a lot of skill personnel in those first few series. We saw, I think, 5 different wide receivers in Notre Dame's first couple of possessions. We saw Holden Stays. We saw, obviously, Mitchell Evans. We saw
Jadarian. Bazon was in early, too.
Right. That's what I'm saying. One of the 5 wide receivers, or maybe it was 6 in the first couple of series. But, yeah, at least 5 different wide receivers. Jadarian Price. We saw Audric Estime. We saw Jeremiah Love very early in the game. I like that. I like you getting the guys engaged early. You rotating there, you doing some things to get Sam Hartman into a rhythm. And look, we're not going to see this team play tempo. That's not what Marcus Freeman wants it anyway. But there were some things that Notre Dame did to, I felt like, expedite its offense, and therefore it helped with some offensive efficiency and execution other than those interceptions.
And it's a good point you make, because Notre Dame only ran 5 times in the first quarter, and they were really moving the ball up and down the field. They did pass to set up the run today. They ended up with 10 runs in the second quarter, one of them a touchdown, 2 longer gains, and then they started to take over a little bit in the third quarter, really settling in with that running game. We have to go back to the non-offensive touchdowns, because we've been talking about this on our whole ride back over here from the stadium. So the one we have not discussed today was a muffed punt, but Devin Ford helped create. The muffed punt happened. Devin Ford helped knock it loose. I think that's a big deal, because Devin Ford also created a fumbled punt against Louisville, but Notre Dame did not get on it. And you know, you think about that in the third quarter, how important that could have been in that game. This is his second somewhat forced fumble on a punt. Ramon Henderson lands on it in the end zone. There's a touchdown. And, John, you were talking about this. I think you brought it up. USC and Pittsburgh combined to score 3 touchdowns. and 27 points in the last two games. And Notre Dame's special teams and defense have done what?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for the perfect segue. Notre Dame's special teams and defense now responsible for 5 touchdowns in the last two games. So Notre Dame, without an offensive score, has outscored its opposition combined, USC and Pittsburgh. I just think that's a beautiful, brilliant stat, particularly if you are Notre Dame. When you factor in how explosive that USC team is, needing a tremendous late rally today to get a 50-49 win at California. Again, this being a Pitt team, not great offensively, but had found a way to be good enough to beat Louisville, that should have beaten Cincinnati, that could have beaten West Virginia. And yet Notre Dame, 5 non-offensive touchdowns, 2 different phases of special teams, 3 different defensive scores, or 3 different phases of special teams, because a punt return, a kick return, and a muffed punt fumble recovery by Ramon Henderson in the end zone, and then a couple of defensive scores in there. That's as beautifully complimentary football as you can possibly get.
5 real possessions in the second half for Notre Dame, 4 touchdowns. They had 1 3 and out where they actually, and I want to talk about this, please, because Christian Gray made an interception to set them up in plus field position. That was the only possession that came up empty for the Irish in the second half. And Tim Priester said next to me during the interception by Gray, that looked like Benjamin Morrison. The wingspan, the leaping, the confidence to go up for it, tipping it to himself. Christian Gray obviously had to play more today without Morrison, with Hart getting hurt. And Pete Sampson asked this question in the press conference. All August long, we said Notre Dame has great corners and great depth. The great corners has been proven over the course of the season. The great depth came into play today.
It did. And to your point, I thought Gray looked really active early in the game. It appeared that he felt really comfortable, really confident, not only in his abilities, but also in what he needed to be doing on plays. And with him in there and Morrison out, I tried to pay a little bit extra special attention to 29 today early in the game, just to see how things were going. And he was so incredibly active, never seemed to be mentally struggling with anything he was being asked to do, always seemed to be able to keep an eye on the receiver, keep an eye on what was going on in the backfield, stay disciplined, stay active, come up and support when he needed to. I think that's testimony to the coaching jobs being done right now in the back end by obviously Mike Nickens and Chris O'Leary. Certainly never hurts when your defensive coordinator, when your head coach transitioned into that spot from being one of the best defensive coordinators anywhere. And then I'll continue to stump for Al Golden, as he has to be a Broyles Award semifinalist, in my opinion. He's that good.
Well, I wanted to bring up Golden because we talked to him about Xavier Watts, and I thought his commentary last week on Tuesday was telling. He's like, he's not going to always have games like he had against USC where you're making all those plays. And he said, but if you look at him, he made so many solid plays as well. In other words, when he makes a tackle, it's not this spectacular highlight reel tackle, but it's a 3rd and 6 shutdown tackle where they gain 4 yards. Or it's a tackle for a loss that he should make, but he makes that play.
I'm so glad you transitioned me into that. I hadn't been smart enough to bring this up. Early in the game, you see him fly up after Pittsburgh runs maybe the first of its little speed option plays, and he's there on the edge, right, coming towards the press box sideline, so the visitor sideline, and you just see X coming up, reading the play so perfectly, making a form tackle. The ball carrier got a little bit away from him. X was still credited with the tackle, a 1-yard gain. That became one of Pitt's many 3-and-out series on the day. But those are the moments you talked about. We keep talking about it. I'm sorry I don't have a better term for it than he's just a football player. The dude is just a natural football player, and he's growing those natural football instincts into his role more and more as a safety.
And I want to stay with Watts because we all thought he would have a very good year. We knew he could support the run we see him support the run in smaller roles against lesser teams, but you can kind of tell Xavier Watts doesn't mind sticking his head in there before the season started that he will make some plays. I want to give credit to Kevin Sinclair because after week 6, there was no bye week, but it's one of those things where, all right, we're at midseason. Let's make our 10 best Notre Dame players, our 12 best Notre Dame players. And I think I had Watts after game 6 on the cusp, so he was number 11. And Kevin Sinclair said, I think you might want Xavier Watts in there, in the top 10. Well, he's in the top 10 now, John. He's had quite a run here. 4 interceptions in his last 2 games, 5 turnovers created. And does he lead the nation in interceptions? I should have looked that up before I got on here. He's tied for the league.
Yes, he does now officially lead the nation in interceptions per a tweet this evening, I believe, from the Notre Dame football PR account, or excuse me, from a post from the Notre Dame football PRX account. So,
and in one of my many moments of dumbness in the offseason, I said, what I want to see from Xavier Watts is, will he be good against the pass this year? Because Ohio State was coming up. Caleb Williams was coming up. He's very good against the pass as well. He's going to have, unfortunately, he's so good he has a decision to make, but putting his name in the NFL draft because he can strike while the iron is hot here. If he comes back, he'll come back as one of the best safeties in the country right now. And with the way Clemson's passing attack is struggling, I think Xavier Watts, Jaden Mickey, hopefully Benjamin Morrison is back for that game. Let's not put the cart before the horse here, but that secondary is playing great football. Credit to Al Golden, Chris O'Leary, and Mike Mickens. But Watts, who would have ever guessed that Xavier Watts would join Benjamin Morris when you're trying to figure out who's Notre Dame's best player in the secondary? And then you could even throw in Cam Hart as well. It's one of the best secondaries I have seen at Notre Dame. It's since at least 1993. The 2002 group was fantastic. They ran into a buzzsaw with Carson Palmer, so I'm not going to say that was all their fault. But this is a playmaking secondary, and boy, they sure have improved as the season has progressed too.
Yeah, and if you'd said, like, coming out of this game, game number 9, that because of the secondary play in the past two games against USC at Pitt, you feel like Notre Dame has really had someone emerge as a potential All-America candidate in its secondary, you would have been, oh, well, of course, yeah, because they have Ben Morrison. No, like, Ben Morrison has been good. People are scared to throw at Ben Morrison most weeks. But Xavier Watts has made himself absolutely a national All-America candidate with what he's done in back-to-back weeks against then undefeated USC, or back-to-back games against then undefeated USC, and then obviously again today against Pittsburgh. Also, I would point out that there's no accident that the Notre Dame defense is finding better ways to get pressure on the quarterback, and that's creating some of these opportunities. And particularly today, maybe it was X's first pick. The quarterback just had to get rid of it in a hurry, threw a deep shot downfield. Went over and played center field beautifully. But again, that's complimentary football, not only as a whole team from offense, defense to special teams, but that's complimentary football within the framework of the defense.
I know you spent a lot of time with Chris Tyree, and every media member enjoys talking to him. He's such a mature, unselfish player. But we have to bring this up on the podcast because Chris Tyree obviously had a kick return touchdown against Wisconsin, and this year he now has a punt return touchdown, a reception for a touchdown, and he had rushing scores previously in his career. Tim Brown, Rocket Ishmael, Julius Jones, Chris Tyree. We believe those are the only four in Notre Dame history to do that. I've been searching frantically because I thought I could find some more in my mind, but there's always somebody. Golden Tate is missing one when somebody jumps online here and is wondering if Golden Tate's one of them. That's pretty impressive company.
That's incredible company. And once again, we asked Chris Tyree postgame about his versatility. He said, it's absolutely something I take pride in. He said, look, that's playing football my whole life. They would just give me the ball and tell me to run around and run away from everybody. And we noted going into this today pregame on the Irish Illustrated instant analysis, we made it clear Pittsburgh was very worried about Notre Dame's speed, yeah, particularly Chris Tyree's straight line speed and how much Notre Dame had augmented what it has at the wide receiver core with not only some bigger bodies, but some bodies that could stretch the field. We saw all of those elements, but for Tyree to now have touchdowns four different ways like that, and to have been so selfless about it, and to have worked so many hours. And again, I can't stress enough Marcus Freeman talking about not making that play at Louisville, but then most importantly, the way Chris Tyree responded to not making that play at Louisville. He's not a captain, but he's absolutely a leader.
Yeah, there's a couple of points here in the comments I don't disagree with. Clint Novak says Pitt was the worst offense Endy has played all season. I do agree with you, Clint Novak. That was the worst offense that they saw this season. It will be the worst offense they see this season as well. Nate Snyder has a question. I don't think we think something's wrong here, but it's something to delve into a little bit. What's wrong with Hartman, he asks? He just doesn't seem like himself. Do you think it's the knee? Any residual from the Central Michigan knee?
I don't think so. I think that there might have been a little concern about the knee, certainly much more than maybe we were led to believe in the immediate aftermath of that Central Michigan game. But I don't have anyone telling me that Sam Hartman's knee is an issue or that it's being bothersome or anything like that. And quite the contrary, even going into that Ohio State week practice, that Thursday or Friday practice before the Ohio State game, Hartman was electric, and I was told never had a football hit the ground during that final practice. He had really good practices leading into this week. Look, this is a Pittsburgh team that had gotten the best of Sam Hartman in the past, and on the biggest stage until this year, the Sam Hartman had ever played on in that 2021 ACC championship. And they rattled him early, and they hit him hard, and I don't even think Sam Hartman finish that game as the quarterback for Wake, or certainly there's some shots of him being really dejected late in that game. But also Sam Hartman continues to do marvelous things that don't show up in the box score, don't result in a touchdown pass, because he does go through his progressions, because he does celebrate. I watched him run downfield to celebrate a rushing touchdown today. I can't remember if it was one of Audrick's or who it was, but he was several yards behind the line of scrimmage and he went sprinting downfield to celebrate that touchdown. So, yeah, you want to see Sam Hartman maybe playing at a little bit higher level. That's why I challenged him to be the guy that I wanted to see more of in the second half of Notre Dame's season. And when we did that content piece for Irish Illustrated examining the first eight games. But I don't think there's anything wrong with him. I don't have anyone telling me that Sam Hartman is less than 100%.
You know, in one of those plays where you say this is in the box score, but it's something people probably aren't thinking of now. Second quarter, and remember, it's still only 10 or 14 nothing at this point. Sam Hartman hangs in there, and he gets absolutely drilled on third down, throwing across the middle of Mitchell Evans for a 22-yard gain to move the chains. You mentioned going through his progressions. He does stand in there and deliver. He doesn't just stand in there and take hits. He delivers important passes. I think Hartman really tried to bail the Irish out of that on fourth down, fourth and five, when he could not quite find Mitchell Evans, who was breaking open. He just had absolutely no time for that play. It was such an interesting decision for the Irish to go for it there, because you think, was the third down inside run to Jabron Payne set up to go for it on fourth down? I just think they believed they were going to bust that. And I think it was a nice tackle by DeShields. I almost said DeLino DeShields, like we're watching the Expos here, by DeShields. I think they thought Payne might break one, and there was just one missed backside block on that play.
Nice reference to Les Expos. As a baseball nut, I much appreciate that.
When you watch that, either you or Priester would have to get that one. There's no problem there.
When you watch that play live, and I was sitting next to Douglas Farmer, and when it first popped, I go, "Ooh!" And because I thought it was going to be a big gain, and the pick guy just worked left to right and made a great tackle of Jabron Payne. You wonder, could he have made that tackle if it had been executed exactly the same, but it was Jeremiah Love instead of Jabron Payne? But there's a trust factor there with Jabron Payne that he's earned. I thought it was set up and executed to give Notre Dame a chance for a chunk play right there. I also felt Notre Dame believed it could execute that play and go for it on fourth down if it decided it wanted to do so.
I keep track of a lot of things during the game. And, of course, with about 7 minutes left in this one, you have to draw a line where it goes to backup duty versus starter duty. But Notre Dame's coverage wins. I had Thomas Harper for a pair, Clarence Lewis for one on third down, Ramon Henderson. And if you make a tackle short of the sticks on third down, that's a coverage win as well. Ramon Henderson with one. We already talked about Xavier Watts, Jaden Mickey with two apiece. Actually, three for Jaden Mickey. Christian Gray's interception. They had the airways completely shut down too. I was coming downstairs on the touchdown pass. You told me it was a very nice catch by Pitt's player for the touchdown to make it 58-7 to lose the shutout. But if we do a lot of rush efficiency stats at Irish Illustrated, I've started going back and trying to do pass down efficiency. Notre Dame is going to have a very high pass down efficiency defense this Saturday against the Panthers.
Incredibly high pass down efficiency defense against the Pitt Panthers. Again, incredible depth, rotation, development, and I know we're coming up on 30 minutes here and don't have too terribly much time left to visit Tim, but I do want to take this time to point out something I tweeted after the game, that we tweeted after the game, and that is, now in back-to-back weeks, Marcus Freeman, or back-to-back games, I keep forgetting the bye week, in back-to-back games now, Marcus Freeman has handed Lincoln Riley the worst loss of his coaching career and now handed Pat Narduzzi the worst loss of his head coaching career, the previous for Narduzzi being a 51-6 loss, I believe, against Penn State, maybe in 2018. So very rarely has Pat Narduzzi teams lost by more than 18 to 20 points. It was a 39-point loss in there and a 45-point or a 38-point loss, a 45-point loss, and now today's 51-point loss. But again, I think Marcus Freeman really is continuing to more and more find his stride atop this Notre Dame football program. We continue to talk about the elevation that Notre Dame has done in recruiting, even since Marcus Freeman arrived at defensive coordinator, how much faster this team is. Right. There's a lot to be encouraged about with what's going on right now with Notre Dame football from the top down.
You mentioned two biggest losses of the Lincoln Riley and Pat Narduzzi's career. He can look to hand Dabo Swinney his three losses in a row, because Clemson lost today to NC State. They are a struggling football team. It is a huge game still for Notre Dame. I don't know if this line will change organically by Las Vegas or if it will change just because the public's going to bet that way. Clemson's a 2-point favorite as of yesterday for this contest. I know it's a weird line, and that's what a lot of us thought when Notre Dame got run out of the building by Louisville, and they were a 2-point favorite over USC. So there's a reason they have big buildings, but boy, the way Notre Dame is playing, I don't want to go too far into Clemson here, but the way Notre Dame is playing, you got to like their chances in terms of their confidence level and how they feel going into a noon kickoff. I still contend it's a good thing that it's not a night game at Clemson where they're 18-1 this century in the evening playing at Death Valley.
It's a great thing that it's a
program noon kickoff.
Yeah. I mean, look, even though there was a weather delay, the noon kickoff at NC State proved to be a great thing. And Notre Dame is coming off of its first bye week and also coming off of an afternoon game at home. That means that the extra rest that you could have potentially been afforded had you had a 7:30 or 8 o'clock kickoff is even less important than what it otherwise could have been. I think the noon kick is huge. I think for all the comments about how bad this Pitt offense is, and again, it is really bad. It has no identity. But that Clemson offense does not scare you. K. Klubnik continues to make the same sort of mistakes that caused DJ Uiagalelei to be benched a year ago. It's also an offense that I think very much struggling to find its identity. Garrett Riley and what he can do scares you up. You know he's going to scheme up some good plays, but then Clemson still has to execute them.
Clint Novak lets us know that it's already now Notre Dame is a 3-point favorite. So that does make a little bit more sense than what you saw. Otherwise, I think maybe there would be fewer. Maybe there'd be one big building somewhere else at Vegas expense because Notre Dame is an underdog going to that. Did not make a lot of sense. John Bryce, it's going to be the most complete game that Notre Dame plays this year. I feel confident saying that no matter how well they play the rest of the way, because that many non-offensive touchdowns. Notre Dame 58, Pittsburgh 7. For John Bryce of Football Scoop, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for joining us at Irish Illustrated Overtime.